Evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let us go to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind him, they took him along, just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. And Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. And the disciples woke him up and said, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." And then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. And he said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" And they were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." It's Mark chapter 4, verses 35 through 41. I've been hearing this story since I was a little kid. Anybody else like just know this one from the flannel graph days? You know, like you get the little pasty white Jesus on the boat sleeping in the back and the pasty white disciples, and then you bring the dark cloud over, like, "Wake up," and then shake it all around. Like, and you hear that story over and over, and long enough you hear it and you go, you know what, it's not that big of a deal for somebody to speak and the wind and waves obey. You forget how completely unhinged it is for a human being to just say, "Whoa, whoa, stop, quiet, peace, be still." And you forget that Jesus had power, had authority over even the wind and the waves. I was thinking, which is more unhinged? That Jesus could speak to the wind and waves and it would pay attention to him and listen? Or that Jesus would be sleeping while wind and waves were overwhelming the boat? Which is more unhinged? I don't mind boats too much, but my sister hates them, right? She it's unhinged that he would be sleeping on that ship like that. That's crazy. Before we get into the meat of that story, let's give a little context for Mark chapter 4. Now, we've been going through Mark 1, 2, 3, and now 4. Next week, chapter 5. We don't have time enough to do every single snippet, although maybe someday we should, because it's fantastic. Mark is just such a wonderful book. But all of Mark preceding this is Jesus teaching. He's just teaching from this same boat on the shoreline. He's in the boat. He's just telling them about the kingdom of heaven. And he's going through all the little things that are familiar to us, the points of the kingdom of God about It's like soils, you know? It's like when you're casting seed on soils, and some of them go on the side of the path and they don't do anything but the birds eat them up. And some go to rocky soil and they shoot up real quick, but then the heat of the day scorches and they die out. Some are like thistles, you know? It's like sown amongst thistles. They'll grow up with the thistles and then the thistles will choke it out. And then others is like good soil. So there's that one in there. And then there's the parable of the lamp. You put the lamp on the table so it lights the whole room up. You don't hide it. There's another one about the mustard seed. It's the smallest seed, and yet it grows into the greatest bush. It's like a tree, so much so that birds roost in it. And it's just a tiny little seed. So Jesus is teaching them about what the kingdom of heaven is like and how it functions in our world. It's like a seed. It's like soil. It's like a light. Now, there's no shock and awe to any of that, is there? Like, those are just simple analogies, simple parables that are used to explain a point. We all know about those things, right? It's an agrarian society. Even though some of us have grown up in the city, we know about those things. It's not really all that impressive until this story, when we see Jesus having control over all of it, and even the wind and the waves listen to him. This is what blows our mind. Mark chapter 4, 35 through 41. That day, when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side." So they were in that boat all day long. For a couple days, they've been on that side of the lake. So let's go to the other side. I think that promise is really important to the story. He promised them to go to the other side. Let's go to the other side. He didn't say, "Let's go to the middle of the lake and die in a storm." Remember? He didn't say that. Don't you think that's the promise that Jesus makes to you sometimes? Does it feel like that sometimes? Like, hey, I'm going to call you to do this thing, and I'm just going to leave you in the middle of it, and you're stuck. That's what it feels like sometimes. 8 years ago, at this time of year, actually it was February 7th through the 20th of February. 20th, my mom's birthday. Happy birthday, Mom. The 20th was my release date, but on the 7th, I went in for a blood clot in my arm. Very simple, except for it wasn't at all. In the end, a lot of you know this story, but I had to have surgery to remove a rib, and that surgery didn't go as well as everyone thought. And a couple days later, I'm bleeding internally. They're pushing 7 units of blood. I had to go back for another surgery. But here's what I remember. Saturday, February 15th, I'd go for an MRI, and I come back to the room. They wheel me back in. I'm kind of like in this la-la land of consciousness, but I note that there's 3 doctors, my entire family there, and 4 pastors. And when there's 4 pastors in a room, you know there's trouble, especially at a hospital. So I remember thinking, this is an interesting thing. We got the invitation to come here to this place to plant a church and Little Arrows and stuff just a few days before all of this. And so I responded to that invitation like, man, this sounds great. We'll plant a church. That would be awesome. We'll do it downtown Newark. And then, bam, storm comes. And I remember laying in that bed going, all right, God, if you want to take me home, I'm okay with that, to be honest with you. Like, this hurts, and this is a lot of trouble. But it seems like you kind of want me to do this thing downtown. And one prerequisite of me doing that church is me being alive. Just saying. I don't think my story is inspirational enough that other people would be like, hey, let's do this in memoriam, you know? it wasn't that exciting yet. So I just said, all right, God, you want me to be alive, I'll be alive. If you don't, that's okay too. So I went through the surgery. Again, they put a stent in here, bunch of drains, a big giant chest tube thing to drain all this blood, 7 units of blood they changed out. Like, I got my whole oil changed that day. It was crazy. But I remember, even the recovery part in the hospital was just hell, mentally, emotionally, physically. And then I got to go home, and I had rehab, and just trying to get things back online physically. And I remember these words that came often throughout that journey. It was this: God didn't bring you this far to leave you here. God didn't bring you this far into the middle of the lake to leave you here in the middle of the storm. He promised you to go to the what? Other side. Now, there were times when I thought, he's taking me to the other side. But he's going to bring me to the other side, on the other side of this storm. What's the storm you are going through right now? Jesus didn't bring you all the way here to leave you here right now. He's promised to take you to the other side. Jesus didn't say, I'm going to be asleep when you need me the most. No, he promised to take you to the other side. He didn't bring you this far to leave you here. He promised you to go to the other side. But here's the thing. It's on Jesus' terms. Here's verse 36. It says, leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. Just as he was in the boat. So he leaves the crowd on the shore, and he just stays in the boat just as he was teaching them. They took Jesus just as he was. The disciples, they didn't go back on shore to get provisions for the journey. They didn't go back to get their coats. They didn't go back to grab a cooler full of snacks. They didn't run to the ATM real quick. They didn't even go back to get fishing worms. Like, they were just as they were. They just went, and they took Jesus just as he was. Maybe Jesus was tired. Maybe he was hungry. Maybe he had a sore throat from teaching all day. They just took him as he was. Question for you: do you take Jesus as he is? Or do we create Jesus as we want him to be? I love this movie, the Ballad of Ricky Bobby. What's the official title of that movie? Talladega Nights. Yeah. So there's a scene in there, for those of you who have a higher class of humor than I do and have not seen the movie, but Ricky Bobby and his number two guy, whose name escapes me at the moment, they're praying, they're around the table, and they all have this discussion of their preference of what Jesus is to them. Dear 8-pound, 6-ounce newborn infant Jesus, don't even know a word yet. Just little infant, so cuddly, but still omnipotent. And he has other things. And then they have discussion. I like to picture Jesus as a tuxedo t-shirt because it says, I want to be formal, but I'm here to party. We create Jesus in the image of what we want Jesus to be. We want a friendly Jesus that doesn't offend us or push us. Maybe we want cosmic Santa Jesus that gives us what we want if we're good and punishes other people if they're bad. Not us. You know, we don't put us on the naughty list. Put those guys on the naughty list. We want a transactional Jesus where if we do good, we get rewarded. It's the karma thing, you know, that's invaded our theology. We have to take Jesus as he is. Take Jesus as he is. We have to take Jesus with all the grace that accompanies Jesus. Sometimes we don't want to give grace to people, even though Jesus is there offering it. All the challenge that Jesus provides to us to not stay in our paralyzed state. All the sacrifice that we need to go through to become like him. We've got to take Jesus as he is and just enjoy all of the journey that there is to be had with Jesus. So they took Jesus as he was, and we too need to take Jesus as he is. Here's the next verse. There were also other boats with him. That's important. We'll talk about it in a minute. A furious squall comes up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Now, Sea of Galilee is actually famous for this sort of thing. Big storms come in. Just the way it's positioned deep in this valley with all these hills around, sudden violent storms are just prone to happen. This one in particular was a doozy because water was coming up over the side of the boat so that it might be swamped or capsize. But check out, you already know this, what Jesus was doing. Here's verse 38. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. There's probably only one cushion on the boat, and he was using it. The disciples woke him up and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He was in the back of the boat, asleep. And the disciples finally wake him up. "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" And I think the "we" is collective. Like, we're all going to go here, including you. Don't you even care that we are all going to drown? And there's some really experienced fishermen on this boat, right? Peter, Andrew, James, John, they're all coming from fishing families. They've probably been on that lake all of their lives. They probably have seen storms like this one before, but this one was a little bit different. This one was worse. This time, they were big time scared. Besides, how could Jesus be sleeping? Last fall, we did a series called What Keeps You Up at Night? It's talking about the fears that we have as people where we're just worried about things. What keeps us up at night? I just find it interesting. There wasn't anything keeping Jesus up. He was not afraid. He did not harbor any fear. Not the wind and the waves, not the storm raging on, not the capsizing nature of the boat going back and forth like this, not the disciples who were probably yelling at each other, "Hey, row, row, bail," all that stuff. None of that woke him up. But as soon as the disciples called out to him, Jesus attended to their need. As soon as they called on him, he was right there. Jesus had complete faith in God. He had never doubted one second that he was going to go to the other side. He knew it from the moment they left the shore. Let's go to the other side. They were just going to go. He knew fully that he was going to make it to the other side because that's where God wanted him to go. And he knew that a storm wouldn't stop him. He knew that a rickety boat wouldn't stop him. He had faith that God would take him to the other side. But the experienced fishermen, they thought they could handle this on their own. They thought, we've seen storms like this before. We can handle this. Hey, even this water flooding over the sides, we can do this. They knew what to do. They knew how to steer the boat properly. They knew how to organize each other so they could row properly. They could manage all of it. And for a time, they might have even thought, we don't need Jesus. Just let him sleep. We're not going to bother him. We don't even need him. But the moment they turn from faith in themselves to relying on Jesus, that's the moment they were saved from the storm. You might think you can handle the storm on your own. You might think, I can organize this chaos by myself. You might think, I've gotten through worse storms than this one. Heck, you might even think, Jesus is asleep. He's not even paying attention to me anyway. But maybe he's just waiting on you to fully rely on him instead of relying on yourself. To finally have faith in him, the same kind of faith that he had in God. That he is the one to bring you to the other side. So check out what happened after that. Verse 39, he got up, he rebuked the wind and said to the waves, quiet, be still. Then the wind died down and it was completely calm. You know what's kind of crazy about this is the phrase that he uses for that quiet, be still, is the same phrase that he used clear back in week one of our series, Mark chapter 1, when Jesus cast out a demon. It's the same phrase. Thimao is the Greek words, to muzzle, to make silent. The obedience of the wind and waves was exactly like the obedience of the demon, and it immediately stopped. For Jesus, this physical problem he was having was the same as the spiritual problem that other people had. And he used the same language to stop the physical problem, and it immediately stopped. There were other boats with them too. I think this is important. It wasn't just the disciples and Jesus in one boat. There was multiple boats around them. This is not just a miracle for the disciples, although that's kind of what we call upon, but think about the miracle that it was for everybody else around them as well. I think when Jesus brings peace to your life, it kind of calms the chaos for everybody else too. All the people around you are impacted by that. The chaos in your life impacts other people, and so does peace in your life. When you come to peace with God, it brings peace with people around you as well. I'm going to wrap up the last couple verses here, verse 40. He said to his disciples, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? Oftentimes when I lead small groups, I'll say a phrase like this. There are no dumb questions, right? Don't we say that to people? Just ask any question. There's no dumb question. But I think this is a dumb question, isn't it? Why are you so afraid? Jesus, did you not see all this storm going on? Did you not notice we were all going to die? I can't even swim. That's why I was afraid. But then he asked if they still have no faith. Do you not have faith that we're going to make it to the other side just as Jesus promised? Do you not have faith that Jesus himself is not going to die in a shipwreck? You didn't even think about that. You don't think that after all that teaching about the kingdom of heaven that he was talking about previously, that he could see you through this physical storm. Do you not have enough faith to know that Jesus cares about you? He cares about you and he wants the best for you. When we're in the thick of the storm, fear is our natural reaction. It's almost like we have to fight that fear by reminding ourselves that Jesus didn't get me this far to leave me here. Jesus is the creator of the universe, and he's greater than this storm. And Jesus truly cares about me, and he wants the best for me, and he wants the best for you too. Our faith can be tested in the storm, no doubt about that. But fear will make you forsake your faith in the one who is Lord over the storm. Jesus has the power to calm the storm or see you through the storm. And I like this next verse. It's so very human. The next verse says, they were terrified and they asked each other, who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? Here's what's funny. They're now more terrified of Jesus than they were of the storm. They were more scared now of Jesus than they are of the storm. The Greek bears it out. Verse 40, Jesus asked them why they were delios, which is timid or fearful. But verse 41, the next verse says they were phobiophobos. And we get our word phobia from there, fear of, right? They were fear, all right? They were terrified at this. Who is he that even the winds and the waves obey him? They just saw this guy, Jesus. He was doing the most human thing ever, sleeping. He was sleeping, and then he says a couple words, and bam, this whole storm just goes away. It's probably one of the most unhinged things you could witness. I think there's this at play. I think we need to be, let me say it this way. I think we tend to be more afraid of the thing than the thing who created the thing, right? We see this, but we don't see what's behind it. And once they saw what's behind it, they saw Jesus is Lord over all of that. They became more respectful and fearful of the thing behind the thing, Jesus. We tend to do this with a lot of different things. We tend to elevate the thing and not the thing behind the thing. We elevate the created and not the creator. We elevate the musician and not the one that the music is singing about. We tend to elevate the one speaking the word rather than the one that the word is talking about. We just tend to do that. We tend to be fearful. We're fearful right now. What's going to happen in the Ukraine? It's scary stuff. World War III going to break out? I don't know. But let's be more fearful of authoritarian powers who use human lives as pawns in their game of power. That's what we ought to be really, really afraid about. The thing behind the thing. When we finally realize that Jesus is the creator of the world where freedom exists and therefore storms happen. Freedom exists in our world. Choices can be made against us, for us. We have no control over some of those things. Therefore, storms happen. And when we realize that Jesus is the creator of all of it, we must drop to our knees and humbly accept that Jesus is also the redeemer of all of it. And he's done everything possible for you to make it to the other side. He's just waiting on you to fully rely on him. He's waiting on you to stop trying to paddle and make your own power and bring your own peace. He's saying, hey, just let me do it. He's waiting on you to call on him. He's not so asleep that he can't hear you. He's just waiting to see if you care enough to call on him. And I don't know if you're in the midst of a storm today. And if you are in the midst of a storm, I don't know what it is. But I know that Jesus didn't bring you all the way here to leave you here right now. Because when Jesus is in your boat can't sink. He's going to get you through the storm and get you through to the other side. Let's pray. God, we thank you for this lesson from Jesus and the difficulties that the disciples had, our difficulties that we experience even today. And whether we have literal storms or storms that are just an analogy of what's going on in our lives, we know that you didn't bring us this far to just leave us here. God, take us through to the other side. Get us through the storm. Calm the storm if you have to. Get us through the storm if you have to. In whatever way, may we call out to you and fully rely on you for you guiding us through this time. As we close out our worship service, Lord. Help us to rely on you. Maybe we need to name that storm that we're going through, articulate what it is, and hand it over to you. And say, God, don't you even care? Don't you care that we might die in this? I know he cares. And God, help us to know that you care and bring us to the other side. In Jesus' name, amen.